Good afternoon, hockey fans. It is Tuesday, March 13th, 2018, and you are joining another great edition of From the Press Box right here on the AHL Report. Thanks so much for being with us today. I am your host, Amy Johnson, the lead correspondent covering the Laval Rocket for the AHL Report. And of course, I'm joined every week by my fabulous co-host, Mr. Rick Stevens, the editor-in-chief and founder for all of our Rocket Sports Media brands. Welcome, Rick.
Glad to be here. You sound especially enthusiastic and perky today.
Well, it's podcast day. How can I not be enthusiastic and perky?
All right, I'll ramp up my enthusiasm as well.
I was going to say, you got to step up now. Well, I'm trying to muster some excitement to talk about the series of four games that the Laval Rocket has played since the last time we all gathered here. I'm going to keep trying to muster some excitement to talk about these games because, whoo, it's not been pretty, Rick. As I said, the Rocket have played four games in between that time. Three of them were at home, one against the Providence Bruins, which they lost. Then they played a game against the Belleville Senators, which they won in very exciting fashion. I'm looking forward to talking about that game. And then the next night they turned around and, really bad loss the following night. And then yesterday they went on the road to begin another road trip, and they played an afternoon matinee game at the ACC against the Toronto Marlies. And hey, guess what? They lost that one too. It's been
a
rough week.
Yeah, there was a win shoehorned in there somewhere.
There was
an overtime winner, but
yes, which they came back from being down 3-1 to start the third period. They were down 2-1 to start the third period, and immediately Belleville scored another goal against to make it 3-1. And kudos finally to this team for finding the grit and determination to not just roll over and let that happen. They managed to score two more in the third period. Actually, Eric Gelina had a hat trick that night. So he scored a power play goal and his third goal of the game to finish out the third period and force overtime. And good old reliable Chris Terry finished things off in the extra minutes to get them a very important overtime victory. It was watching the game. You would have thought that they had won, clinch a spot in the playoffs or something. The way the guys came over the boards and reacted with such excitement, just piling on Chris Terry and whatnot after the game. They were very, very, very happy with that win. Wish there were more of them to talk about.
You know what I found interesting and good for Eric Gelina for the hat trick, his first.
His first in his career.
And I understand there was even hats on the ice.
There were a few. I was shocked.
I don't know what makes it different about the earlier hat trick, the hat trick earlier in the season, the two hat tricks actually that received no hats. But
I don't know. Maybe fans weren't tuned in yet. I don't know.
But what I found interesting was, you got a hat trick and you got an assist on Chris Terry's goal. So
yeah, a 4.9
for Eric Gelina, but he ended up a plus one in that game. And I know one or two of the points was on the power play, but still, it means he was on the ice for at least one, if not two, of the Belleville goals. So still not a great night defensively for Eric Gelina, even though it was overshadowed by the hat trick, as well it should be. But that kind of set up the narrative for next game when he continued his poor defensive play and ended up a whopping minus four.
Minus four. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we weren't the only ones who noticed that. Some of the media folks did take notice to the fact that he was minus four on the night that night. And frankly, in yesterday's game against Toronto, he didn't look great that day either. We've seen occasions a couple of weeks ago, we talked about this where, you know, he's been, there's been times recently where he's paired with Brett Learnout, and you can see Brett Learnout visibly getting frustrated when he gets back to the bench after finishing a shift with Zelenov that, you know, and just kind of takes over and does all the things himself, because there's just a lot of play by Eric Zelenov that's a bit lazy. He's got a monster shot from the blue line. I'll give him that. He finds the back of the net sometimes. But his play in his own end just really needs to be more consistent, and it needs to be more, he needs to be more proactive than reactive. And even when he is reactive, he needs to be faster on the reactive.
Yeah, he's not very mobile. He gets beat on the outside a lot. He wanders a fair bit and so causes confusion with his defensive mate. Mm-hmm. Not very disciplined in his positioning. For a big guy and a guy with size, he's pretty soft. He doesn't play as physical as he should.
Yeah.
He's got a long stick, and he doesn't use it effectively to block the lanes. There was in the Toronto game, there was pucks on the power play, mind you, but they were being zinged around him, passed around him, and you would think any one of them he could have intercepted, but didn't. So it's been a, I know that he's acknowledged for his offense, but it's been a real struggle, and not just recently, throughout the season on the back end. In his own zone for Zelenov.
Yeah. Happily, speaking of defensemen, in that first game against Belleville, which is the night that they won in overtime, Matt Tarmina is back on the blue line finally after missing, I'm going to say a good probably 6 weeks of action ever since the AHL All-Star game. Chris Derry had come back a couple of weeks ago, but Tarmina finally re-entered the lineup on March 9th. And immediately, of course, back on the top pairing, and Tom Parisi has been paired with him on the top pairing. We've been talking about Parisi quite a bit this season, and only natural to see and happy to see that especially with Brett Learnout called up with the Canadiens. Of the defensive core that Sylvain Lefebvre has left, Tom Parisi was the guy that he has chosen to pair on that top pairing with Matt Tarmina. And the two of them have looked very good together. Makes quite a difference, especially on the power play, to have Tarmina back in the lineup. He just has a lot of energy, creates a lot of opportunities. The passing is there. The skating is there. It's just really good to see Matt Tarmina back in the lineup.
Well, it's odd because you kind of get used to, you know, other than Parisi and Learnout for the most part, it's a scary group back there. You know, Simone Bourque and Stéphane LeBlanc they can look good at times, but then, kind of scary, and then there's been the rotation of the ECHL guys, whether it be Matt Petgrave, whether it be
Willie Corin,
Etienne Boutette, Willie Corin, and all, and you kind of got used to, I did anyway, seeing the level of chaos back there, and then Matt Tarmina steps back in. You forget what a good defenseman he is.
Yeah, he really is.
Certainly noted for his offensive play, as he should. He's, you know, a smooth skater. He's got good vision, really good setup man. But he's very, very smart, and plays pretty well in his own zone as well. So it was nice to see that level of defensive play come back, and he looked very good with Tom Parisi.
Yeah, he definitely did. And, you know, it's they need to find some consistency, especially the blue liners. You know, Fucali and McNiven are doing what they can, with Charlie Lindgren also up with the Habs right now. They're on pretty much a rotation, although McNiven did get pulled. He did get pulled from one of the games last week. I believe it was the game against the Bruins. He got pulled. And Fucali came in relief and then started the next game. And that was the game that they won in OT. Some were speculating that maybe then Sylvain would ride the hot hand and Fucali would start again on Saturday against Belleville, but that wasn't the case. He is looking at actively rotating them. So McNiven started on Saturday. Fucali then started again yesterday in Toronto. And Fucali didn't look bad in Toronto yesterday. McNiven didn't look bad on Saturday. Saturday's game had so much promise. The first 20 minutes that this team played on Saturday night, coming off of that overtime victory the night before, was the kind of hockey I've been dying to see this team play all season long. They came out, they set a good pace. They maintained puck possession. They were pressuring. They were getting shots on net, and they scored three goals in the opening period. Chris Terry, Luc-Olivier Blain, and Kirby Reichel all scored in the first period. All in 8 minutes, three goals in 8 minutes. So they go to the first intermission up 3-0 on a team that they just beat handily in overtime the night before. Things are looking great. It's, let's get a back-to-back win here before you go out on the road again. And then, I don't know what happened. Second period, that's all they could score. Belleville ended up coming back and beating them, five unanswered goals in the second and third period to beat them 5-3 that night. And you couldn't blame McNiven on it. You couldn't. The defense was horrendous. Penalties are really starting to get to be a problem. They're coming at exactly the wrong times. The penalty kill has been struggling all season. And after the game on Saturday night, players and Coach Lefebvre were both extremely displeased with giving up a three-goal lead to give up five unanswered and lose in that fashion. Yesterday's game in Toronto, I thought maybe, especially in an NHL rink, they looked decent in that first period. They were only down 2-1. Toronto scored kind of midway through the period, with 30 seconds later, Adam Cracknell turned around and answered that, even the score again. They got one more on them before first intermission, but okay, they're in this. Second period, no scoring. It was all penalties, but no scoring in the second period. Okay, they've got this. And then again, third period, no, it falls apart. So I don't know if it's just that frustrations are getting too much into the mental game. I don't know if it's just the lack of resources in the lineup because of how depleted they are because of injuries and call-ups. But they don't have an easy week this week. They play Toronto again tomorrow night on the road. Then they go into Utica on Friday night. We all know how that is usually a battle. And then they go to Syracuse on Saturday night, which is also always a battle. They have a really tough week ahead of them. And Rick, I want to will them away to just get focused, get determined, and fight for it.
Well, you talked about it was really an emotional overtime win, and then that carried into the next game, the back-to-back with the Senators, and they had that great first period. You mentioned three goals. Belleville managed two shots in that first period. It was total domination. And at that point, they should have buried them. And it's tough. It's really tough. I mean, there's all kinds of things, maybe three different things that I can think of that are kind of working all in the same direction, which is the bad direction, unfortunately, and we've seen these collapses at the end of the game, particularly in the third period. And You know, McNiven probably gave up a goal or two that he would have liked back. But, you know, with any of the goaltenders in Laval, you have to have confidence. You have to have trust in your defense to perform in an expected way. Mm-hmm. And when they're not, when your defense is constantly letting you down, you tend to cheat, or you figure I've got to make up for this, or I've got to do something extra. And I think that's what's causing issues with all the goaltenders, is they can't trust their defenseman to make
right.
that play. You had the undercurrent last week of Zach Fucale getting called up, and let's be honest, to occupy a place on the bench. While Niemi was recovering from a minor injury, and Charlie Lindgren was set to start, and then that whole drama, media-driven drama about Fucale was in some way slighted, and he didn't get his opportunity, and all of that sort of thing when he was sent back
right.
down, and that
and people not understanding that. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I just that plays into the head of McNiven too, seeing the support that Fucale has and wondering how he gets that. Anyway, go ahead. There's one more point, but go ahead if you wanted to talk about that.
I was just going to make the point that it's a people hammering the goaltending issue, and this is something I'm sure, you know, this for a different podcast, I'm sure you guys talked about it on Habs 360 last week, but you know, Charlie Lindgren, they're down 4-0 after the first period. Everyone's calling for, okay, everyone's just automatically expecting that Zach Fucale is going to get his opportunity. They'll pull Lindgren, put Zach Fucale in, and that doesn't happen, and everyone loses their ever-loving mind. Well, it's just not how it's just not how coaching decisions are made. You know, and it was the right decision to leave Charlie Lindgren in. And so, yes, everyone, as you say, then Fucale gets sent back down the next day, as was probably always expected to have happened. And this narrative happens where, as you good word to use, that he was quote unquote slighted, that he didn't get his NHL opportunity. Well, I don't know. It's just there's a bit too much focus on it. And as you say, is unfair to Michael McNiven, who is also battling just as hard.
Yeah. And we know that McNiven hears that stuff and recognizes that stuff. Just to clean that up, to finish that up, that the right decision was made. None of the goals were Lindgren's fault. No reason to take him out. And Lindgren is the goalie going forward with the organization that
right.
the organization wants to invest in. So let him battle through it. Let him get a lesson out of it. And I guess the other factor I'm just going to toss out is this, the home record. It's pathetic.
Oh my God.
It is the worst home record in the league. The worst.
They have
23 points at home. That's the worst. That is the worst home record in the league. And it's funny because 2 years ago when this all came up that, you know, the Canadians were moving their franchise and everybody said zero, there's zero downside to this. I said, well, wait a minute here. Playing at home, playing in front of a Montreal audience, playing in front of media who have an agenda, playing in front of fans who want to be a GM, it's going to affect. In St. John's, it was the fans were happy and loving and very supportive of the players. Different situation in Laval, and I think we're seeing the effect of that. On the players, on the games, on their home record. So all of that, put that all in a blender, and I think you're getting a picture of how the season has turned out the way it has.
Yeah. For an now granted, I don't think their home record is quite as bad as you say, Laval with the worst home record in the league. You know, some would have thought, okay, inaugural season, brand new building, it probably one of the nicest facilities in the league right now, because it's a brand new building. I'm sure there's a lot of factors that play in there. Oddly enough, just down the road, Belleville, also inaugural year, not a new building, but a fully renovated building, also doing terribly. So something to be said for, needing to find a way to win at home in front of fans. Luckily, they're still packing Place Belle every night. They had, I think, 6,000 plus on Friday and 7,000 plus on Saturday. So they're doing a good job in keeping fans there. But it's an interesting social dynamic to see how much all of that and where the team is placed now is factoring into how they're playing. Just as an update on injuries, that's another thing that's really not helping the team right now. Besides having call-ups, they are just plagued with injuries. I know it's late in the season. I know we've got veteran guys that, maybe take a little longer to bounce back and whatnot. As we've mentioned, Chris Terry and Matt Tarmina both finally back in the lineup. Thank goodness. But Yannick Veilleux, still not in the lineup, is on this road trip, allegedly. Could come back into the lineup at some point this week, as well as Jeremiah Addison. Jeremiah Addison, as we have talked about before, has been skating, has been practicing with a no-contact jersey. About a week or so ago, he lost the no-contact jersey and was in full regular practice with his teammates. So Veilleux and Addison are allegedly on this trip. Don't know if we will see either of them at any point during this road trip. It may just be that they want them both actively practicing with the team the entire time, but we will wait to see. However, on the flip side of that, Daniel Audet is still out. He is not on the trip. Stefan LeBlanc was injured, I want to say, on Saturday. He did not play yesterday. And in the second period of yesterday's game, Antoine Wakeid was injured as well. He, according to our friends over at 91.9 Sports, he will not play for the rest of the road trip. So that doesn't bode well. And so it means what was already a thin lineup has just gotten even thinner. So I'm sure that there's a distinct possibility that we'll see a PTO signing at some point this week to fill in some of these holes that keep reappearing.
Not bad, though, if you can add a Memorial Cup winning spark plug type player, captain. He was a former captain of the Windsor Spitfires the kind of guy who brings energy on the ice, off the ice, as a scoring touch, grit. He's got, I think, 3 or 4 games in at this level at the end of the 2015-16 season. But really, there's some anticipation about seeing what he can do at the end of the season. Hopefully he's healthy enough to get back in the lineup.
For sure. So we will we'll be covering tomorrow night's game against Toronto. They are not at the ACC again tomorrow night. They'll be back in Ricoh Coliseum tomorrow night. So we'll be sure to have all of the live updates for you on that at the AHL Report on Twitter. And, of course, full game recap afterwards. And we will be on the road with the team this Friday and Saturday in Utica and Syracuse, Friday and Saturday night, respectively. So be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We'll, of course, have some exclusive interviews with players and, of course, Coach Lefebvre, as well as some exclusive photography, photos, video, all of those kinds of things. So we will bring you full coverage of the Laval Rocket as they wrap up this road trip later this week. And you can find all of that at the AHL Report. Going to move over now to some AHL news. I'll start with do some general housekeeping here with our player of the week. The CCM AHL player of the week is a forward from the San Jose Barracuda. His name's John McCarthy. He played in 2 games last week, totaling 3 goals and 3 assists for 6 points. during which time he registered the first hat trick and the first 4-point game of his 9-year professional career. So that was a pretty big weekend for Mr. McCarthy, I think. that would be John McCarthy, the CCM AHL Player of the Week from the San Jose Barracuda. Going along with that, I seem to have lost my...
How about your Phantoms?
Phantoms are doing great. In fact, Coach Scott Gordon today just signed a contract extension. Some of the beat writers in and around Lehigh Valley and Philadelphia were a bit surprised to see that come down and happen before the season was over. Thought that maybe he would test the NHL coaching waters, but seems that, it's interesting to me. We talk so much about the importance of player development and how successful, yes, successful Sylvain Lefebvre has been at developing players, and that's what this league is all about. And Scott Gordon has been quoted as talking about how much he has enjoyed developing so many good young players who have made it into the NHL with the Flyers and other organizations over the years. And so he happily has signed a contract extension now before the playoffs have even started. So they're doing well. The Phantoms are tearing up the standings.
Congratulations Scott Gordon.
Yes, congratulations to Scott Gordon. I'm sure the players are happy to see that as well. And they are currently solidly in first place in the Atlantic Division. We're going to talk about some playoff standings here shortly, but they're in first place in the Atlantic Division, so they're doing pretty well. As far as some suspensions, just to announce that the AHL released today, there are three. There's a suspension for the Iowa Wild's goaltender, Nicholas Svedberg, high sticking incident, got a match penalty for it.
Uh-oh.
And so automatic one game suspension. So can't believe they're too happy about that. Rochester Americans forward Justin Bailey suspended for one game for an illegal check to the head. And Syracuse Crunch defenseman Ben Thomas suspended one game for getting a game misconduct for boarding. And so that's an automatic one game suspension for getting two game misconducts in the same in a season in the quote unquote physical fouls category. So since this was his second game misconduct for that kind of action, he was automatically suspended for one game. So them's the suspensions. Bad, bad, very bad. Speaking of, so we talked about the bad goaltender who got suspended, but I want to briefly just before we get to the playoffs here, want to talk about another goaltender who had a pretty incredible weekend. Alex Nedeljkovic, the Charlotte Checkers goaltender, made AHL history on Saturday night when he became the 13th goaltender in the AHL's history to be credited with scoring a goal. And if you haven't seen the video, it's quite the celebration and reaction is, I mean, he launched himself into the bench afterwards. He cleared the puck out of his crease. It sailed all the way down the ice and right into the empty net waiting at the other end. So it's pretty exciting to watch that happen.
And the interesting thing is it's not his first goal. Back on the 30th of December in 2016, when he was in the ECHL, he scored. He in the game against he was playing for the Everblades, Florida Everblades at that point.
Okay.
He made 40 saves that night, and oh by the way, scored a goal against the Atlanta Gladiators. So
wow.
He now has an ECHL goal. I think he was the 12th, about the 12th player in ECHL, the 12th goaltender in score in ECHL history. He now has an AHL goal. And now we're all just waiting for him to get called up to the NHL level and just complete the trifecta, as they say.
The hat trick of goaltender goals.
Yeah.
That's pretty neat. I'm just looking here at the record. So the last time a goaltender scored a goal in the AHL was actually about a year ago, March 24th, 2017, when Jonas Gustafsson from Bakersfield scored against San Diego. Before that, it was Rito Berra in 2015. Looking at some other names here, Chris Holt, Drew McIntyre, and Taro Nitamäki playing with the Philadelphia Phantoms back in 2004.
I remember Nitamäki with the Flyers.
And Taro Nitamäki, I loved him as a goaltender, Phantoms or when he was with the Flyers. So, yeah, Nitamäki, his was the overtime goal against Hershey on April 11th, 2004. I don't even know how that happens, but I'm going to have to look that game up, I think. I don't even know how that happens.
Did he score on a goal?
I don't know. I'm going to have to look this up. There are two on this list. There are two goals scored by AHL goaltenders that were overtime goals. The Antero Nitamäki won Philadelphia against Hershey, April 11th, 2004, and Drew McIntyre playing for Manitoba at Chicago, February 20th, 2008. Both of those are marked as overtime goals. Mm. I don't even know how that happens. We'll have to do some research and get back to you.
All right.
So speaking of the Phantoms, you did allude to this. We want to talk a little bit about the playoff races. They are really starting to come into line here, as the Toronto Marlies were the first team in the league to clinch a berth in the Calder Cup playoffs. They clinched that on Saturday night, with Laval losing to Belleville that night and the Marlies winning over Providence that night. That gave them the numbers that they needed to clinch a postseason berth. So in the North Division, they have 86 points in the North Division. The Syracuse Crunch are at 79. The Rochester Americans chasing right behind them at 76, and the Utica Comets at 70. To put that into perspective, in fifth place is the Laval Rocket with 54 points, so don't hold your breath out there. So the North Division looks like it's pretty set. It's just going to be, especially second, third, and fourth place, it's going to be jostling for positioning. And the next few weeks, the next month is going to be pretty telling. Especially with the Crunch and the Amerks only 3 points apart.
It's funny, though, because all season long we've been talking about the Moose and the Marlies as the class of the league, more or less. And those two teams have been kind of playing 500 hockey over the last 10 games. And it's been the Phantoms that have gone on a run, winning
eight
of the last 10. And now they played a couple of extra games, but have 87 points, which tops the league.
Well, and the Crunch have gone on a bit of a run in their last 10 as well. They've gone 7-1-1-1 to vault themselves into second place in the division. And the Comets and the Amerks have been struggling a little bit, so. It's going to be interesting here as we come down the stretch. In the Atlantic Division, as I said, the Lehigh Valley Phantoms are solidly in first place by 11 points, 87 points. Wilkes-Barre Scranton somehow is hanging on to second. They're doing, although they haven't played well in their last 10 games or so. The Bruins are in there, and the Charlotte Checkers are hanging on to that fourth place spot. But the points are a lot tighter in the Atlantic Division. There's only 5 points separating fourth and fifth place. The Bridgeport Sound Tigers are certainly still in it. Springfield has gone. Springfield came out of nowhere the second half of the season, and they're at 61 points. It's really the Wolfpack and the Hershey Bears that are kind of sitting down there, not doing much. And out in the Pacific Division, and right now, it's the Tucson Roadrunners are in first place. But again, they've got, it's just the scheduling is just so weird out there. The Tucson Roadrunners and the San Diego Gulls are in first and second place respectively with 54 games played, but the Texas Stars are in third place with more points, 73 points, and having played 62 games. but their percentage is low.
How did they play 8 more games than the other team at this point? I don't get it.
So it's going to be interesting. There's about 4 more weeks left in the regular season. The regular season ends, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. We're 4.5 weeks away from the end of the regular season. So a lot can happen for those teams jostling for position. And we are going to keep a full eye on it. For sure. Another thing we're keeping an eye on, Mr. Rick, is some exciting news that came out of the ECHL today. And rumblings have been happening about whether or not this was happening. Rumors have been swirling. But they finally made an official announcement today.
And the official announcement from the ECHL is that that St. John's has been granted an ECHL franchise. And next season, we'll take up residence in the North Division, and we'll be facing the Reading Royals, the Brampton Bees, teams that we're familiar with. Mm-hmm. It for a while it didn't look like it was going to happen. There was one group who have brought basketball to St. John's, the St. John's Edge, and that's Dean McDonald and his group. Then you had the other group that were led by Glenn Stanford, and he was had brought the St. John's Ice Caps, the Ice Caps of St. John's, the Montreal franchise, and they were competing a bit for an ECHL bid, and they came together. So that in the end, both the St. John's will have both basketball and hockey, an ECHL franchise, 20 basketball games, and you'll have your share of home games for the to be named St. John's. Whatever, I don't think they're going to be the Ice Caps again, but we'll see. But the main thing is that Mile One will have professional hockey next year.
That's right.
And that's great to see.
It's great to see. It's great news for the very, very passionate hockey fans in St. John's. Still to be determined who the affiliate is going to be. There were plenty of people who were swirling around some rumors of some different franchises who the affiliation might be tied to.
Toronto.
But, yeah. Probably. We'll see. Yeah, there were a couple of different – there was some people were throwing Montreal around there, too. I don't see that happening.
No.
I don't see Montreal going back to St. John's again.
No.
But we'll see what happens. But just very, very pleased to see that professional hockey in one shape or form is coming back to St. John's. It's really great for the city. Glad to see that Glenn Stanford is involved in it, as he'll be the he'll oversee team operations, which is great. And it should be exciting, to say the least.
Indeed.
That brings us now, of course, to story time. Grab a snack. Grab some juice. Grab a snack. It's kind of like story time in the afternoon, evening, whenever you're listening to this. Because it's time for Where Are They Now? And Rick has assured me that he has someone in mind for today's edition of Where Are They Now? So I will hand the mic over to him and let him have at it.
Well, it's not a long story. It's not a long tale this week, but I definitely will be weaving a story for you.
Okay.
Because we're going to focus on Mike Weaver.
Mike Weaver.
Do you see what I did there?
I like Mike Weaver.
Yes.
I'm just going to ignore that. Yeah.
You got that?
I got it.
Okay. Mike Weaver... he's one of those good guys in hockey.
He
was born and raised and played his minor hockey in Bramley, was undrafted. The call didn't come, so he got himself a hockey scholarship to Michigan State, and off he went to Michigan State and ended up parlaying it into some successive free agent signings with the Thrashers, the Kings, the Canucks, the Blues, and Panthers, and then the Canadiens to finish out his career. So that he played 633 NHL games over a course of 14 years in the NHL. Add to that 255 games in the AHL. He kind of made up for his lack of skill, as it was, by being a student of the game. He just gobbled up everything that he could, watching video and doing drills and so over the course of two seasons, he played 48 games with the Montreal Canadiens. And it was odd in an interview he did with The Athletic. He talked about as his career, he was working very hard. He always had to work hard to, he was always one of those bubble players, and he had to work very hard to stay in the league. And it came mostly with studying and repetition and all those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But near the end of his career, he would wake up every day with swelling in the left side of his face. The entire left side of his face was all swollen. And they ran a myriad of tests. And there was no known cause. It was kind of an idiopathic condition. And once he retired, it was all gone. Didn't happen.
Okay. Stress related, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. They chalked it up to being the stress of having to fight for your job every day, the stress of having to prove yourself every day, and which he did a pretty good job doing over, he lasted 14 years in the NHL.
Yeah.
But all of that came to a head, and he realized that he had to retire. One of his friends had said to him, okay, now prepare to work even harder for a lot less money. We've talked about players who transition to another career or either successfully or unsuccessfully. We've kind of had that as a theme this year.
Sure.
And he said, when asked about that, he said it was... for him, one of the toughest things, and he believes he can speak for, others, that transition as a pro athlete to, he called it the afterlife, the after hockey life, that was one of the toughest things he ever did. Like we said, it's happened successfully for some and not so successfully for others, and tragic in some cases.
Yeah.
But he was smart enough that when he went to Michigan State, he took an aptitude test and found his strengths and ended up graduating with a telecommunications degree. And specifically took courses in web design and programming and coding and software development. And even in his time on the Charters or his off time in the NHL, he came quite adept at developing websites, designing and developing websites.
Okay.
So following his career, he decided to partner up with former NHL goaltender Rob Tallis, and they created a coaching app. And if you go to the website coachthem.com, you'll see what they've come up with. And Mike says that, at the minor league level, you have a lot of coaches that are, you don't want to say nothing more than, but they are hockey dads first.
Sure.
With little to no experience. And, you know, don't have necessarily the time or a lot of resources to be taking, you know, multiple workshops or leaving their family mm-hmm. to go away. So what he did was create this app, this platform, as a resource for coaches and for coaches of all levels, actually. And he's reached out to NHL coaches and asked them to contribute their 10 favorite drills. And he's got all of this information laid out so that for example, the minor league coaches can ensure that they don't arrive at practice and say, okay, now what are we going to do? They have a plan in place, and so that their practices are focused on skills development. And for a $5 per month subscription, any of the coaches can take part in it and learn from his knowledge. And it's kind of, you know, he says he's, you know, a 5'8" kind of guy who didn't have the natural skills, but had the desire, and he had to work very hard, but he honed some skills, and that his skills in research and breaking down video and positioning and teaching and all of that. And so he's used his approach to the NHL in his software platform. And as well, he runs summer coaching hockey school. And so he's prepared well, and he's taken what he's good at, and he's parlayed it into, I think, a very successful transition to the after hockey life.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons I wanted to spotlight Mike Weaver.
Well, and still managing to stay in the game in a creative way. You know, sometimes we've talked before about how, you know, they actually sometimes will go on to become coaches and things like that. But this is, you know, this is a way to help grow the game and help other coaches, especially at those lower levels. And I think it's a really creative idea, and kudos to him for doing it. He also happens to have one of the best senses of humor out there.
He's a good social media follower and a good practical joker. And yeah.
Yes, he is. Well, good for Mike Weaver. That's pretty good. So be sure to go check out Mike Weaver's app and his website, and, you know, share it around a little bit. Let your local hockey coach know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Spread the word.
Coachthem.com. Coachthem.com.
Love it. Well, I guess that brings us to top five. Are you prepared? Yeah.
Not really, to be honest.
No, you're not. I don't know that I am either. But, well, okay. So on top five, we always do, if there's a holiday, we do a special top five for the holiday. And this week, St. Patrick's Day is coming up at the end of this week. God help every downtown area, because it's on a Saturday. That can only mean bad things for businesses in any downtown area. So what we're going to do, I don't know that it's necessarily a top five, because this was, you know, I came up with this week's top five, and then I was like, well, this is a little more difficult maybe than it needed to be. So we might just talk about some things. I don't know if we'll go through, you know, five to one kinds of rankings, but top five St. Patrick's Day, kind of like likes and dislikes, the things that we love and the things that we hate about St. Patrick's Day and the celebrations and traditions and all those kinds of things that surround it. Because honestly, I feel like people either love St. Patty's Day or they hate St. Patty's Day. I don't feel like there's any like happy medium. Well, I don't even want to say love or hate. It's either like they're totally into it or they couldn't care less about it. Maybe that's more appropriate.
All right.
Where do you fall on that spectrum?
I'm not terribly invested in this one. I have some likes and dislikes, and I managed to put together sort of 5 items. I'm not so heavily invested that I have exclusions or honorable mentions or anything like that. I just kind of happens. And no, I know. Yeah, and you're going to pick more like this, right?
Well, I need to write this down, that this is the key to not getting rules and exclusions, is to pick something that you aren't particularly fond of. I don't know.
Well, I don't care one way or the other about it. Yeah.
Well, see, there you go. I don't have any exclusions. I don't have honorable mentions. I kind of have everything lumped together. And mine are going to, it's not all things that I dislike and it's not all things that I like. They're going to kind of go back and forth a little bit. There's some things I like. I should say where I fall on this spectrum. I don't mind St. Patty's Day. I don't mind occasionally going out for St. Patty's Day, although some of the celebrations that some bars and whatnot have get to be just a bit over the top and a bit much and a bit out of hand. But St. Patrick's Day can be a fun holiday to celebrate. But like Rick as well, I'm not, you know, it's not like circled on my calendar every year. Like, oh, I can't wait till St. Patty's Day. So I'm kind of middle of the road. I'd say middle of the road.
All right.
So do you want to start or do you want me to start?
I'll start.
All right. What you got?
I'll start.
What you got?
At number 5, and I will name number mine.
Okay. I will too.
Okay. At number 5, I have food. I'm just going to category food.
Okay.
And on the good side, yeah.
Spoiler alert. That's what my number 5 is.
Okay. I've kind of done plus or minus on each, I think. Maybe not. But on the positive side, you know, I can't remember the last time I had corned beef and cabbage on St. Patrick's Day, as I understand that's the thing that you're supposed to have. I don't know that I've participated in that on the day.
Uh-huh.
I've certainly had it other times and it sounds good to me. And so yeah, I'll give that as a positive food. On the other hand, enough with the green stuff. Just color everything green and you know
green
last
cookies,
year I,
green muffins.
Yeah, well, yeah. Now last year, it was we were in Syracuse, covering the crunch and the ice caps.
As we will be again this year.
Oh, that's right. and the medium meal was pizza
with a
green colored crust.
Which was not good.
And the thing is, it wasn't like uniformly green. It was kind of patchy green. So
it was like neon green. It was,
yeah, it just kind of, what is this, advanced mold or?
Well, that's just, especially in a bread. Crust is bread. You don't want to see green in your bread. It was hard
and
to eat.
And everybody
that pizza.
It was, and it wasn't just us. You looked around and everybody's kind of looking at this like, okay, do we have any, you know, anything else? So,
non-food dyed crust. Yeah, because I mean, you've got green crust with then the red tomato sauce on top. Oh, it was just it. You eat with your eyes. That's the saying, right? You eat with your eyes. That's what plate presentation is all about. And I think I ate half a slice of pizza and I was like, I can't do this. I just can't. And it didn't taste any different. It's just food coloring dropped into the dough, but ugh.
And the other food item that just turns me right the other way is the McDonald's Shamrock Shake. And I don't think I've ever even had one, But again, just the sound of it, the looks of it,
it's mint.
It just looks disgusting.
The mint milkshake.
So. Great.
I had one once, and they're not very good. No, it's not mine. I think I had one once. People live and die by those things. It's just like people that live and die by the McRib, and I don't understand why, because it's the most disgusting thing I've ever tasted. And I love McDonald's, but well, I have to. Food is my number five as well. However, I'm going to say my negative thing I don't like is that damn corned beef and cabbage. I love cabbage. I love cabbage. I love Brussels sprouts. I love stuffed cabbage. I love cabbage and noodles. I love cabbage. Corned beef and cabbage, I cannot stand. And I love corned beef. That's the weird thing. Like, I love both of those things separately, but I hate the dish corned beef and cabbage. And in fact, I remember on that same trip last year where we were in Syracuse on St. Patrick's Day, the night before, we were in Rochester, and
yeah,
they served – corned beef and cabbage that night. And bless them. And I am never one, I should preface this by saying I'm never one to truly complain about complimentary food, and shame on me, but it was not the best corned beef and cabbage that I've had. And it was, I'm not a corned beef and cabbage fan. And that was all they had that night. And it was really, I was like, I'm going to have a giant salad, I think.
That's great.
Yeah, there you go. On the other hand, I love Irish food. If it's not corned beef and cabbage, I love Irish food. Give me a proper cottage pie, otherwise known as American shepherd's pie, and boxty. Really super good to have like boxty on St. Patrick's Day, which is it's like an Irish version of potato pancakes. Crispy, get a little sour cream on them, Irish soda bread. So I love Irish food, but I just, ixnay on the corned beef and cabbage for me. Ugh. So number four.
We go from food to
what you got next.
We go from food to music.
Okay.
And I tried to think if I like any, Irish music, and I guess, Lorena McKennitt is kind of Celtic, so I guess that she's just got that tremendous soprano voice, kind of a haunting music. She's Canadian. She's from Stratford, one of my favorite small towns in Canada. So on a reach. I guess that's my like. At the other end of the spectrum, there's the Irish Rovers, and again, you may not know them because they're Canadian and they did the time.
And
actually, they had their own show after Hockey Night in Canada. And I've been to a few St. Patrick's Day celebrations, and I would conservatively estimate that I've heard the Irish Rovers sing Black Velvet Band at least 10,000 times. At least 10,000 times.
Probably.
Yeah. Tied up with a Black
Probably.
Velvet Band. Yeah. So I'm kind of done with that song.
Interesting. I like Irish music, Celtic music, that kind of thing. So I can't agree with you on that one, but I understand I feel like it's one of those things you either like it or you don't. So that's okay. My number four is kind of like, some of the interesting, I don't know if I want to even call them traditions, but some of the interesting events that people come up with surrounding St. Patrick's Day. I mentioned how there are a lot of bars that just get way out of hand, which is not something that I want to touch with a 10-foot pole. And so that's kind of on the negative side, which is an event that's, I know, very popular with people, and it's it can be very funny. It's just a bit overdone to me, and that's the whole Finnegan's Wake thing. Finnegan's Wake is a ballad that's been around literally for more than 100 years, sometime in the 1800s. It's a very comical Irish song. It's about a guy named Tim Finnegan who was born with a love for the liquor, falls off a ladder, smashes his skull. They think he's dead. The mourners at his wake get really rowdy and spill whiskey all over his corpse. And he jumps up back to life when the whiskey hits him and he joins in the party. Typical Irish
song. Could happen.
Right? Could happen. And so it's very traditional, at least, well, and forgive me if this is, maybe it's just because I've grown up in Eastern Pennsylvania and there's plenty of Irish folk around here. At least around here, it's very popular for bars to host a Finnegan's Wake on St. Patty's Day. And so you literally have people, you have a live guy who gets carried in a coffin into the bar, and bagpipers are, I should say a coffin with no lid on it, an open casket, gets carried in, and bagpipers play, and he gets set up usually like on a stage or something like that. And the mourners are wailing behind him. There's usually a contest on who can wail and grieve in the most outrageous way. And then the idea all night is that you have to go up to the corpse of Tim Finnegan and you have to try to make him laugh to come back to life. And usually then it's whoever succeeds in getting the dude to laugh usually wins some sort of ridiculous prize. It can be very funny, but it's just so overdone and it gets ridiculous and over the top and it's just not my thing. Another thing
Pennsylvanians, I don't even know how to...
Pennsylvanians.
Whatever the correct term.
Pennsylvanian.
Term is, you really know how to a good time there, don't you?
Oh, it's very interesting. I don't know. Another thing, and I'm sure there are places that do this. We have there's a very strong Celtic and Irish community here in the Lehigh Valley area where I live. In fact, it plays the city right next to mine plays host to I don't know if it's the nation or the world's largest Celtic festival every fall, where all of the Highland competitors, the caber throwers and the sheepdog and all those guys, they come and they compete, and it draws millions of people and whatnot. So there's a very strong Celtic community, and so they do that city does a huge St. Patrick's Day celebration, and one of the contests that they have is the best legs in a kilt contest, which is kind of scary because I don't think you're I don't think I've ever seen good legs in a kilt. So
I wore a kilt once.
Yeah?
Once?
How was it?
Yes. It was different.
Really?
Yeah, it was different.
That's all you have to say about that?
That's all I have to say about that.
Are we allowed to ask on what the occasion was that you were wearing?
No.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
No.
Did you have good? Could you have entered the contest?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Hands down. Yeah. Right. Okay. So anyway, so that's I just there are some really this is more of a dislike number for me. It's just there's just some really wacky events and things that happen around St. Patrick's Day that just kind of make you scratch your head and go, what? Oh, okay, like why? But all right. So that's my number four.
All right. Well, number three. Well, first, before number three, just to go back a little bit, to rewind a little bit, you did say that you liked Irish music and so on. So if any of our listeners have send all your YouTube links to Irish Rovers or John Allen Cameron or, you know, the like, send them to Amy. She'll, yeah.
That's great. I always thoroughly enjoyed when the Ice Caps would have a win. I'd They had good Newfie music blasting out of that locker room on some nights. It was very good.
So number three, I have a dislike and a little bit of a like. The dislike is sports teams who don a green jersey for St. Patrick's Day. And it just doesn't work. Unless you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, and there's a reason. You know, you go back 100 years, and the Leafs were known as the Toronto St. Patrick's, and so they have those St. Pat's jerseys, which were green, and from time to time, and when they play in and around St. Patrick's Day, they bring out those retro jerseys, and that's fine. They're honoring the heritage, so mm-hmm. that's fine. But just the, you know, the Flyers in a green jersey. It just doesn't work. So that's my dislike. At number three is sports teams who have green jerseys for a day.
My number three is a like, and that is I like a good St. Patrick's Day parade, because I do like bagpipers. I like Irish dancers, Irish step dancers. I like all that kind of stuff. And when you have a good St. Patrick's Day that's really well organized, it's full of really great music and good dance troupes and lots of silly people doing silly things. And who doesn't love a good parade? I can't remember the last time I went to a parade, much less a St. Patty's Day parade. But yeah, St. Patrick's Day parades. I'm down with those. I like those.
All right. Well, that's similar to my number two, and it's just cities that celebrate their Irish heritage. And last week we talked kind of extensively about it in St. John's, and I think St. Patrick's Day is actually a provincial holiday in Newfoundland. But I think it is. And we talked about on St. Patrick's Day the Canadiens alumni are playing on Fogo Island.
That's right.
This coming St. Patrick's Day, so it's honoring that Irish heritage and being from Montreal. Have to acknowledge, and you mentioned parades, the Montreal St. Patrick's Day parade is a pretty big extravaganza, and it's a great tradition, and it goes back to the 1820s, and there's a rich historical connection between Montreal and the Irish, and you know, if you see at City Hall or you see the Montreal city flag. In the right-hand corner, there's a shamrock to recognize that, to honor that connection. Mm. So sure, a parade or any kind of, like they're doing in Newfoundland, any kind of celebration to honor, a big celebration to honor St. Patrick's Day.
Nice. My number two is a strong dislike. And it is the overuse and inundation around St. Patrick's Day of leprechaun everything, shamrock everything, and people, commercials, products, whatever, sporting a really bad Irish accent or attempt at a bad Irish accent.
Do you want to give us an example?
No, I don't, because I'm, as a voice actor, Irish is not one of the dialects that I am proficient with, and so I will not do a disservice and dishonor and disrespect an Irish accent. So I will not give you an example, but it's just, you know, it's one thing to celebrate a culture, it's another thing when it gets a little campy, and sometimes I think there are companies or people who go a little overboard with it. And it's irritating. And not everything has to have a shamrock on it. And not everything has to be like leprechaun. Like, Like, okay, Lucky Charms, the cereal, is allowed to be as leprechaun and green as it wants to be on St. Patrick's Day because its mascot is a freaking leprechaun. Aside from that, like, not everything has to turn into Shamrock Leprechaun City. It just doesn't. And if you need something that has an Irish accent, get a real Irish person to say it.
Okay.
So what's your number one?
My number one is simply, and I don't know if this has to do with St. Patrick's Day or not, but it's just what came to mind, and that is just simply the bagpipes. A pretty eclectic musical taste, and that eclectic musical taste includes the bagpipe. I'm not saying that I sit around and, you know, I've got...
Oh, come on, you know you do.
...tunes on my phone. No, I don't. But but going and seeing a, you know, a mass pipe and drums band, like a march past, that's powerful. The, what do you call those spinning, the drummers who spin those... their batons. No, I don't know what any of it's called. And the kilts and the bearskin busbies or whatever they're called. The Black Watch kind of Edinburgh castle.
Yeah.
The whole deal. You either have that, like a big mass pipe band, pipe and drum kind of band, or brings me back to long lost days of a solo bagpiper on a dock at 6 a.m., the mist rising off the Cam River, flag raising and all of that happening in my college days when I was a historical interpreter at an old Fort William, and really then learned to appreciate and love the bagpipes. Because there's no other sound like that.
No, there's not.
First light in the morning. Yeah.
I agree with you on the bagpipes. There's a in the city that has all of these rich Celtic cultural heritage things here in the Lehigh Valley. It's the city of Bethlehem. The one of the two high schools in the city, their high school marching band is the Grenadier Band that's fashioned directly after Her Majesty's, the Royal Grenadier Band in England. And
nice.
At the high school level, they have a full bagpipe corps in their marching band.
Fabulous.
So we in these parts get to hear the bagpipes quite often, and it's quite impressive to listen to them. Especially to have such a large group of them at that age at the high school level as well. My number one is also a gigantic dislike, and it is my biggest dislike, and it stretches far and wide, and no one will ever change my mind. I don't care what you say.
Wow.
It kind of goes along with your number three, but I'm taking your NA sports teams that have green jerseys, and I'm taking it to every single bit of sporting apparel in the NHL, whether it's jerseys, socks, or team gear that you can buy online or in the store that is green. Stop. For the love of God, stop. I don't need a Philadelphia Flyers cutesy blinged out rhinestoned green St. Patrick's Day jersey or shirt. People don't need green St. Louis Blues baseball hats. They don't. Unless you are the Dallas Stars or the Minnesota Wild, I just don't want to see green. There's like, gear is expensive enough to buy. Why am I going to drop another, I don't know, $30, $40, $50, $60, $70, $80 on something that I'm going to wear once a year?
I just
for
have
no
a question.
Reason. What?
I've forgotten. What's the color of the Philadelphia Eagles jerseys?
That's fine. That's the color of their jersey.
Oh, okay. All right.
At Christmas time, The Eagles don't wear red pants with their green jersey to make festive holiday uniform happen. I feel this. That's a terrible idea. Like, it's just, I hate it across all sports with all holidays. It's the same thing like Halloween, and there are plenty of sports teams that do the special kitschy Christmas crap for the fan gear. I know some people really like that stuff and, oh, isn't this cute? No, I just give me the regular colors. Stop. Stop. Well, and it's just, it's too much.
What team was that? It was an ECHL team. Might have been the Indy Fuel that had the
SpongeBob. Oh my
God,
that did the SpongeBob. I am the biggest SpongeBob Square. I shouldn't even admit this on a podcast, but I love SpongeBob SquarePants. I just did, so too late. I love SpongeBob SquarePants. I own like the first four seasons on DVD. I'm not going to lie. The writer of that show is a genius. He's just a genius. So I love SpongeBob, but I'm sorry, professional hockey players should, and it wasn't even like, it was two teams. One of them was dressed as SpongeBob. One of them was dressed as Patrick, and they played each other looking ridiculous. Absolutely. Like, I felt so horribly for those players because they're posing for pictures in these god awful unis, and they just, their eyes look dead. Like, they were just like, please kill me now that this is going permanently on record that I have to wear this. And the
no,
ECHL
I,
also,
I agree. I agree.
The ECHL
the
also did, like, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say the ECHL also did a superhero theme throughout all of the teams this year where, like, yeah. For one game, each team had, like, superhero uniforms and jerseys. It just, yeah. No, please stop. Please. Stop. These guys are adults and they are professional athletes. Let's not dress them up like they're kids. Not in a good way, like in a bad way. Anyway, it's my rant. It's my number one. Now I'm in a bad mood, St. Patrick's Day.
That was good. That was good.
All right. Well, we want to hear what your favorite things or most hated things are about St. Paddy's Day. Maybe one of your dislikes is people who can't figure out how to spell St. Paddy's Day. P-A-T-T-Y or is it P-A-D-D-Y? Always a topic of hot debate on Twitter around this time of year. So be sure you tweet us at the AHL Report. Let us know what your top five or even your favorite thing or that you love or hate about St. Patrick's Day or how you're planning on celebrating this week, this weekend. Maybe you're starting today and you're going through till the weekend. I don't know. Whatever it is, we want to hear about it. So be sure to reach out on social media and let us know. And, of course, between now and then, we will have all the updates of all of the action with the Laval Rocket. Hopefully, they can get some more wins on this road trip as they move forward with the game in Toronto again tomorrow. And, of course, be sure to check out all of our other podcasts here at Rocket Sports Radio. We've got Hab a Listen, Habs Unfiltered, and Habs 360, which is our live Canadians podcast every Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. with Chris G. and Rick, where you can join the conversation with them. So be sure to check all of those out. Hit us up on Twitter at the AHL Report. You can find Rick on Twitter at All Habs, and you can find me on Twitter at Flyers Rule. And Rick, thanks so much. This was a great episode.
It was. And we'll see you in Utica and maybe in Syracuse for some green pizza.
Absolutely. We'll see if we have green pizza. We will report back on whether there was green pizza this weekend. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next week, next Tuesday, for another great edition of From the Press Box. Until then, we are signing off. Have a great week.